Today is Friday, May 28th, and you are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinua Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, U.S. warns of further sanctions on Ethiopia and Eritrea.
The government's response of mass arrests, media restrictions, human rights violations, declining political space is fueling intercommunal rivalry.
Plus, Greece introduces COVID travel certificate.
The code for the verification application has been provided to us by the EU, and we have customized it every member state. So we have the Greek application.
Also, Washington probes growing UFO reports. Our top story today is in the U.S. The United States is warning Ethiopia and Eritrea that they may face further U.S. actions, including Magnitsky Act sanctions, if those stoking violence against civilians in the Tigray region do not reverse course. As VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sane reports, leading U.S. lawmakers also support tougher measures to end the atrocities.
More than 6 months of conflict in Ethiopia's Tigray region between the Ethiopian and Eritrean militaries and the Tigray People's Liberation Front have left thousands dead, some 2 million people forced from their homes, and some 5 million facing famine. Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chairman Bob Menendez held a hearing on the Tigray crisis Thursday and said he sees echoes of the genocide in Darfur.
All sides are guilty of abuses, but the fragmentary reporting we have indicates that Ethiopian, Eritrean, and allied militia have disproportionately been responsible for targeting civilians in a manner that is both reckless and sinister. We appear to be witnessing war crimes and crimes against humanity.
As the violence and the humanitarian crisis worsen, Menendez and other senators called on the State Department to finish reviewing whether the atrocities in Tigray amount to war crimes as soon as possible. Ranking member Senator Jim Risch agreed that the world has seen this script before in places like Darfur and Rwanda.
The United States and its allies must continue to transition and do so quickly from a position of hands-off diplomacy, like encouragement, engagement, and talking to the Ethiopian and Eritrean governments, to hands-on action.
Reports of gang rape of Tigrayan women and girls are widespread. Here, rape survivors shelter in a safe house in Mekelle and learn new skills. Sarah Charles of the U.S. Agency for International Development told senators the brutality is some of the worst she has ever seen.
The reports not only speak to widespread incidents of rape and other gender-based violence, but of systematic attempts to dismantle society and destroy families. Some perpetrators are targeting the wives of priests, abusing women in front of their families, or using a level of violence so brutal that women are left with organ damage.
Robert Godek, the U.S. Acting Assistant Secretary for the Bureau of African Affairs, said that after such a hopeful beginning under Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, Ethiopia is now at a turning point, and unless it reverses course, could face further measures such as Magnitsky Act sanctions that can include asset freezes and barring human rights violators from entering the U.S.
Ethiopia is at a turning point. The government's response of mass arrests, media restrictions, human rights violations, and declining political space is fueling intercommunal rivalry and imperiling the national elections now scheduled for June 21.
Contradicting multiple human rights and relief organizations, Ethiopian government officials say the vast majority of those killed in Tigray are fighters, not civilians. Ethiopia's foreign ministry has accused the United States of meddling in its internal affairs and threatens to reassess relations with Washington if security sanctions continue. Cindy Sane, VOA News.
A UN Human Rights Council special session to address the human rights situation in Palestinian territory was dominated by calls for Israel to be held accountable for alleged abuses. No European or North American country was among the more than 60 members and observer states that supported the request. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet opened the proceedings by recapitulating what she called the appalling events that led up to the special session. She noted 242 Palestinians, including 63 children, were killed by Israeli strikes on Gaza, and another 28 Palestinians, including 5 children, were killed in East Jerusalem. At the same time, she reported indiscriminate rocket fire launched by Hamas and other armed Palestinian groups from Gaza killed 12 Israeli citizens, including 2 children. She said the heavy rocket barrage triggered the 11-day clashes between Israel and Palestinians. She deplored the huge number of injuries and extensive damage to Gaza's infrastructure. She welcomed the May 21st ceasefire, but warned unless the root causes of this violence were addressed, future deadly eruptions would occur.
There must be a genuine and inclusive peace process to address these root causes and bring the occupation to an end. In the meantime, I reiterate my call on Hamas and all armed groups to refrain from use of indiscriminate rockets and mortars, for which there must be accountability. And once again, I urge Israel to ensure accountability in accordance with its obligations under international humanitarian human rights laws.
Special Rapporteur on the Human Rights Situation in the Palestinian Territory, Michael Link, acknowledged the indiscriminate attacks on civilians by both Israel and Hamas almost certainly violated international humanitarian law, but added the damage done by Hamas in Israel paled in comparison to that caused by Israel defense forces.
If we are not to meet again in yet another special session in a year or 3 years from now, then decisive steps must be taken now to fully end the occupation. Accountability is the key that can alone unlock the titanium cage that is the occupation.
Israel's ambassador to the United Nations in Geneva, Mera Elon Shahar, accused many countries at the session of presenting a moral equivalence between Israel, a democracy that abides international law, and Hamas, an extremist terrorist organization. She said the UN Council was biased against Israel.
Since the Council inception, 30% of all special sessions have targeted Israel. Instead of the Council being a moral voice, unequivocally stating that Israel has the right to defend itself and condemning Hamas for the terrorist activities, we have witnessed a ritual where Israel is targeted and singled out. It does not matter what are the facts and what is the reality on the ground.
Palestinian participants at the meeting, however, urged Council members to adopt a draft resolution calling for an independent international commission of inquiry to investigate all alleged violations of international humanitarian law in the Palestinian territory, including East Jerusalem and in Israel. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Residents of DRC's eastern city Goma have been told evacuation is, quote, compulsory, unquote, amid warnings that another volcanic eruption following one on Saturday could occur with very little or no warning. Nekachile of Reuters has more.
Thousands fled Democratic Republic of Congo's eastern city of Goma on Thursday amid warnings that a new volcanic eruption could hit at any time. Nearby Mount Nyiragongo, one of the world's most active and dangerous volcanoes, erupted on Saturday. At least 31 people were killed and thousands left homeless, as some 17 villages were destroyed. The river of lava stopped just a few hundred meters short of Goma's city limits. Officials are now warning that magma has been detected beneath Goma and the adjoining Lake Kivu, and that an eruption could occur with very little or no warning. Volcanologists warned early on Thursday that in a worst-case scenario, a volcanic eruption under the lake, accompanied by an earthquake, could trigger a sudden release of carbon dioxide. Such an explosion could asphyxiate thousands of people, they said. Officials have said evacuation is compulsory, prompting people to head out of the city in cars, boats across Lake Kivu, or on foot, but some picking their way across a landscape charred by lava, still hot from Saturday's eruption.
That's Nick Achille of Reuters. 2 investigative reports this year accused the Burkina Faso representative of tobacco giant Philip Morris of funding terrorism through tobacco smuggling. In an exclusive interview with VOA, Apollonia Campore rejects these findings. Henry Wilkins has the story from Burkina Faso's capital, Ouagadougou.
selling cigarettes to smugglers who pay jihadists to protect their convoys. That's the accusation levelled against the Burkina Faso representative of Philip Morris International by the Organised Crime and Corruption Reporting Project, OCCRP. In a February report, the Sarajevo-based group cited officials, rivals and former colleagues of Apollinaire Compaoré who accused him of indirectly funding terrorism by working with smugglers who carry not only cigarettes, but drugs and people into Mali, Niger, Nigeria and Libya. It also accused Burkina Faso authorities and the Swiss American tobacco giant of being complicit in a vast smuggling operation centred around a warehouse in the northern town of Markoi.
Indeed, we think Philip Morris was aware of what he was doing. There's also clear indications that parts of the Burkina Bay state, including customs, were involved in the warehouse at Markoi. In fact, the customs officer we interviewed characterized it as a mafia at the top of the state.
Burkina Faso's customs department was not available to comment on the accusations against the agency or against Compaoré, who also owns a major bank and telecoms company. In a written response, Philip Morris said there is no evidence of wrongdoing by the company and no information indicating their products shipped to Burkina Faso were smuggled into neighbouring countries. But a 2019 UN report also found that a company owned by Compaoré supplied regional smugglers, says one of the report's authors.
He knowingly supplies those that traffic, and he must be aware of this because there's no legal market for those cigarettes once he brings it to northern Burkina Faso.
In an exclusive interview for VOA, Compaoré refuted all these accusations. He says the United Nations lied and that those who worked on the report for the UN are no longer employed by them. One of the richest men in Burkina Faso, Compaoré also dismissed claims in the OCCRP report that two of his companies have never paid taxes. Are they the Director General of Taxes, he asked. He said they are all lying to harm him. They're lies, he insisted. When asked if there is any evidence of Compaoré being involved in cigarette smuggling, Mamouni Lougé, the General Manager of Burkina Faso's tax department, cited confidentiality laws. What is known, he said, is that the tax administration is very vigorous, and does not in any case let this type of fact pass it by without it going unpunished. Whether or not authorities take action, the allegations that cigarette smuggling supports Sahel terrorism is not expected to go away anytime soon. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
Syrian President Bashar al-Assad won a fourth term in office with 95.1% of the votes in an election, which opponents and the West say was marked by fraud. Flora Bradley Watson of Reuters reports.
Syrian state TV show crowds gathered in the capital Damascus on Thursday as President Bashar al-Assad's election victory and his fourth term in power was confirmed. The head of Syria's parliament announced that Assad had got more than 95% of the vote and that turnout was 78%. On his election campaign page, Assad thanked Syrians for their, quote, high sense of nationalism and notable participation. But his opponents and the West have cried foul. The opposition boycotted the vote and said Assad's presidential rivals were deliberately low-key. Ahead of the election, France, Germany, Britain and the US said the vote would not be free or fair. Protests were also staged in Syria's last rebel enclave of Idlib, where hundreds on Wednesday denounced the vote as a charade. Syria remains in the midst of a war that's killed hundreds of thousands of people and driven 11 million, about half the population, from their homes. Assad's government said the election showed that Syria was functioning normally, despite the decade-old conflict. His win gives him seven more years in power and lengthens his family's rule to nearly six decades. His biggest challenge now that he has regained control of most of the country will be an economy in decline. Tightening US sanctions, limited relief from allies Russia and Iran, and the global health crisis mean prospects for recovery look poor.
This is the Voice of America. Thousands of NATO troops, several warships and dozens of aircrafts are taking part in the military exercises stretching across the Atlantic and into the Black Sea region as tensions with Russia simmer. Steadfast Defender 21 is aimed at simulating the 30-nation military organization's response to an attack on any one of its members. It will test NATO's ability to deploy troops from America and keep supply lines open. Belarus authoritarian leader is heading to Russia to seek assistance amid a bruising showdown with the European Union over the diversion of a flight to arrest a dissident journalist. Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko is set to meet Friday with Russia's Vladimir Putin at his Black Sea residence in Sochi. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, for broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Greece presented its COVID-19 digital travel certificate on Friday, saying it is ready to use it before its EU-wide launch on July 1st. Greece was one of the early advocates of a certificate that would ease European Union travel curbs and help pull the country's economy from recession by lifting tourism revenues. The European Council and Parliament last week reached a deal on the digital green certificate following a rapid pickup of vaccinations, allowing widespread lifting of coronavirus curbs. Digital Governance Minister Priyakos Pierikakis.
The code for the verification application has been provided to us by the EU, and we have customized it, every member state. So we have the Greek application. This application will be used by border agents in order to verify whether the document is accurate or not. So by pressing the QR scanner, and this is not a classical QR, this is a cryptographic QR, you can only read it with the application, it has been read.
Thus, Greece's Digital Governance Minister, Kyriakos Pierikakis. Saudi Arabia is requiring all Muslims for the scaled back annual Hajj in July to be vaccinated against COVID-19. In Tanzania, where vaccinations have not yet begun, Muslims hoping to go to Mecca are urging authorities to start jabbing. Charles Combe reports from Dar es Salaam.
Omar Abu Bakari, like many other Muslims in Tanzania, wants to make the pilgrimage to the holy seat of Mecca. It's an integral part of the Muslim faith. But for now, only those immunized against COVID-19 can take part in this year's Hajj. Abu Bakari is worried because vaccinations in Tanzania have yet to be approved. The time remaining is limited, but still, we haven't given up. We expect our top leaders to check on the issue of vaccination carefully so we can accomplish this holy worship. We failed to go last year because of COVID-19, and if it continues till next year, it means our worship has ended. This is the main pillar of our religion. Until earlier this year, Tanzanian authorities had rejected COVID-19 vaccines. Then President John Magufuli instead promoted false remedies for the disease. Soon after Magufuli's death in March, his successor, Samia Hassan, formed a COVID-19 task force to advise her government on handling the infections. In their report 2 weeks ago, the committee declared the vaccines to be effective and recommended that travelers going abroad be among those to get their shots first. Saidi Abud is the committee chairperson. The committee advises the government using its institutions and continues to move to allow free vaccines using vaccine brands listed by the World Health Organization because the shots are effective and safe since they are scientifically approved. Last week, President Hassan said the government is checking to see if COVID-19 vaccines that are available in other countries can be ordered for Tanzanians. But with no vaccination campaign in sight, Muslim leaders see the chances of Tanzanians attending this year's pilgrimage to be low at best. Haidari Kambwili is the Hajj Travelers Coordinator with the National Muslim Council of Tanzania. I cannot say that we can't accomplish Hajj worship, but the percentages seem to be very low to accomplish the worship this year. The remaining percentages, only Allah will decide. Because even if we get vaccinated, as our leaders are struggling to accomplish, still, time is a challenge. Meanwhile, COVID-19 has not stopped Tanzanians like Abu Bakari from continuing to worship in mosques. But for now, his plan to join his fellow Muslims in Mecca for Hajj prayers remains up in the air. Charles Kombe for VOA News in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
Brazil's President Jair Bolsonaro threatened on Thursday to use the armed forces against local governments that announced new lockdowns as the South American country battles a new brutal COVID-19 wave. Jason Albano of Reuters reports.
Brazil's President Jair Bolsonaro once again demanded a return to normality on Thursday, now threatening to involve the military against any local governments, announcing new lockdowns in the midst of a new brutal wave of COVID-19. This adds to concerns over Bolsonaro's unprecedented attempts to politicize the military. In the northern Amazonas state, Bolsonaro hinted at his threat to the armed forces.
More than an obligation and duty, I am sure you, the armed forces, will act within the four lines of the Constitution if necessary. I hope it will not be necessary and that we return to normalcy. We are not yet in it. We are far from it. But no one can accuse the current president of being a person who is not a Democrat, who does not respect the law, and who does not exist within the Constitution.
Bolsonaro reiterated that freedom in Brazil is in the hands of the military. The far-right president aims to run for re-election next year, though he has been widely criticized for his handling of the pandemic, including opposing lockdowns. Brazil has reported more than 450,000 deaths since the pandemic began.
That's Jason Albano of Reuters. Videos of Navy pilots pursuing flying objects with amazing capabilities have struck a nerve in Washington. Matt Dibble looks into the latest UFO mystery.
When it comes to UFOs, U.S. officials are typically tight-lipped, but that is changing.
There's a whole fleet of them. Look on the ASA. My gosh.
In this video, taken from a U.S. Navy jet, we hear crew reacting to what appears to be a craft flying at high speed and in astonishing ways.
Well, if there's like a thing, it's rotating.
The video comes from a covert Pentagon task force established in 2007 and charged with collecting and analyzing encounters with what are now known as Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, or UAP. After three videos were leaked and posted online, the Pentagon confirmed in 2020 that they are authentic recordings made by Navy personnel. The disclosure has officials at the highest levels of government treating UFOs with a new urgency and openness, including a former president.
There's footage and records of objects in the skies that we don't know exactly what they are. We can't explain how they moved, their trajectory.
The Pentagon is expected to issue a report soon, providing Congress and the public with an analysis of UFO data from multiple government agencies.
There are things flying over national security installations. We don't know who they are. We don't know what it is. It isn't ours. We need to find out.
It's been 70 years since the Pentagon opened its first UFO study. In recent decades, there has been little official acknowledgement of the phenomenon, though sightings have continued. These cases are often researched by citizen groups.
We've been studying UFOs for all these years, and almost all of the evidence is witness testimony. You know, it's understandable. It's exciting. It convinced me years ago and still does, but it is just witness testimony. And you need something beyond that. That's why the Navy videos or all the data is so exciting.
One of the most prominent incidents took place off the coast of California. A U.S. aircraft carrier's radar began to pick up multiple craft moving in unusual ways. Two F-18 jets were sent to investigate. Both pilots and their crewmates described a five-minute encounter with a cylindrical craft that one described as not behaving within the normal laws of physics. After the craft abruptly disappeared, it reappeared on radar 60 miles away, where a third pilot made this recording. Determining if such objects pose a threat is the report's mandate, but some observers hope the study will go even further in search of answers.
And that's really the point that those of us in the field have always said, is that there's a real phenomena. It deserves serious study.
Matt Dibble for VOA News.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Makwe Yabaro, and our managing editor, Paul Alexander, I am Chinedoko in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great weekend.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat.
African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.